Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 1st, 2010. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, the National Homebrewers Conference keynote address from Mark Stotrud of Summit Brewing in St. Paul, Minnesota. Why does Mark think we're a bunch of deviants? We'll stick around and find out. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And you can find our show page at facebook.com/basicbrewing. And you can see pictures of our fans and of us and of our trip to Minneapolis recently and such as that on that page. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And finally, you can now find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on the iTunes store, too. Well, as you can tell, I'm a little under the weather this week, so I'll keep this part brief so that you won't have to suffer through it. Neither will I, unless you like the breathy voice of this. Can't say that I do. But if you can suffer through it for this bit of information, I think it'll be worth it. I got a note from Mike Neely down in Louisiana, and Mike says, "Great news, just an FYI, but your neighbors to the south have passed the legislation that legalizes the serving of homebrewed beer in licensed establishments." Mike says, "As of August the 15th, we will be able to get a 3-day permit, which will allow us to have meetings, tastings, competitions, and conferences at establishments that hold a consume on-premise license." Mike also says this protects our ability to serve at festivals such as the Shreveport Brew on October 16th in Shreveport, Louisiana, as these are licensed establishments for the duration of the event. Mike says it was an interesting process and a lot of hard work. So special thanks go out to Representatives Dana Hay and Connick, who sponsored the bill, the members of the Malt Munching Mash Monsters, Red Stick Brewmasters, Dead Yeast Society, Mystic Crew of Brew, and Crescent City Homebrew Clubs, the Beer League of Louisiana, and Gary Glass of the American Homebrewers Association. So congratulations. Pretty awesome, guys. Congratulations to all the Louisiana homebrewers and beer lovers down there. And I hope this results in many wonderful competitions and meetings, etc., and perhaps a national conference somewhere along the way. That would be a fun road trip to take down south this time. Speaking of which, I want to remind you once again that we're going to be taking the rest of July off from posting this particular podcast. All kinds of family happenings happening for us. People coming to see us going to see other people. It's just crazy. So I hope you understand, and I hope you have fun with your family, too, as well. I do hope to post an episode or two of the video side of things, so stay tuned. One note about today's show. Mark Stotrud did say a couple of non-work-safe words and phrases. You know, not too bad. More of the PG variety than the R variety, but just a warning for those who may be listening at work, among people who may be objectionable or who may have twins in the back seat or something. It's on later on when he starts talking about email that he gets from homebrewers. So there you go. There's your warning. So now, while I've still got somewhat of a voice, let's go to the National Homebrewers Conference keynote, and here's Charlie Papazian to start us off.
Gary Glass forewent introducing me, but I really, really want to take my hat off to Gary Glass and the American Homebrewers Association staff and all the coordinating and the local community that are putting this event on. It's from what I hear, it's the biggest we've ever had. So that's all. Well, I'm up here primarily to introduce our keynote speaker. But before I do that, I just want to give you a little bit of background. You know, I was just realizing not too long ago that this is 2010, and it was in 1970 that I made my first batch of homebrew. That figures out to be 40 years ago. And in some ways, that seems like it was yesterday, and in other ways, it feels like it was a long, long time ago. And I think that for a lot of professional brewers that have been developing this craft beer homebrew culture that we have in this country, I think they might have similar feelings, like it seems like yesterday, and it also feels like a long, long time ago. I can remember the excitement I had after tasting my first homebrew and going out to where whatever it was in those days, Kmart or Albertsons or whatever, and buying that 13-gallon green trash pail and a couple of cans of PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon malt extra, hop malt extract. Never knew what hop was, but it was in the can somehow. And have being so excited and, the only thing I figured I needed was that fermenter and a can opener, and I endeavored into home brewing for my first batch. And when I realized that the stuff in the can was actually syrup and it had to be mixed with lots of sugar and water, and I didn't have a spoon, well, I just put my hand in there and just kind of stirred it up. So this was my first charismatic spoon right here. That first batch of beer didn't come out so well. So that kind of gets into the theme of trials and tribulations. It's not all enthusiasm, and it's not always all great beer. Sometimes, as pioneers, you take some hits. I went on the web just before this meeting, and I went and counted how many craft brewers, microbrewers, brew pubs exist here in Minnesota. I didn't include the contract breweries, so you have to, this is an estimate number, but there are about 25 brew pubs and packaging breweries in Minnesota. And add to that another 9 breweries that at least the Brewers Association is aware of, that are in planning. So that's another 33% more, a number of breweries that are in planning. And I can remember, my first visit to Summit Brewing was it 1987. And you got to remember, in those days, there was, as brewers, there was lots to be excited about. Especially homebrewers, lots if you knew and you lived close to one of the dozen breweries, small breweries that existed in the United States. And in those days, we knew, and some of us had visited every single one of the breweries that existed in the United States. And Jim Homer, where are you? You were on that trip too, weren't you? I saw some photographs recently, that visit, there he is. So, Minnesota is fortunate to have a really great brewing heritage over the many years. You have the likes of the Augushell Brewing Company, which is celebrating its 150th anniversary this year, which is a milestone, and it's a great tribute to this. Great tribute to Minnesota and the beer heritage here. And what Mark Stutrud, the man I'm introducing, represents is in those days it was a new wave. And Mark was indeed a pioneer of craft brewing and microbrewing that, in the big picture of the United States, I think Minnesota and Mark and what he's done here often get overlooked for some of the more more media savvy, let's say, the craft brewers that are out there. I remember coming here and tasting the beers and remembering that it wasn't. I know you imported a brew house from Germany, from what I recall, and I have pictures of that. Nice, beautiful. It was one of the first breweries that had done anything like that. And I remember coming to the brewery, and you guys were so stoked and so excited to be brewing beer finally. And I remember how delicious the porter tasted in those days. We had it out on the sidewalk out by nearby the brewery. And yesterday, you have the traditional beers like porter. You have their pale ale. I had a great draft cask pale ale last night. And I also love Summit's Pilsner, which is, I think, is better than most Pilsners I've ever had in Europe. And I think, Summit Brewing really represents the breadth and the variety and the diversity of the kinds of beers that we love to brew and we love to experiment with. And what Mark has done with Summit is really a tribute to the trials and tribulations. Like I said, Mark is probably, I don't know what he's going to talk about today, but I'm sure it hasn't been all great beer along the way. There's probably been a few gray hairs. And for all of you who are out there that are thinking of getting into the business, it is very rewarding, but it's a long haul. And here's someone, I want to introduce Mark Stutroot, who's been for the long haul, and it's a privilege to be able to introduce him. And as his website says, they only brew beer. They only brew what they love to drink. Whatever is left over, they sell. Mark?
Is that working? Is that working? Cool. Oh. All right. Oh, it fell down. I'm going to see if it'll just sit here for a second, Gary. Charlie, thank you for the gracious words. It's certainly an honor to be with you guys and gals this afternoon. And there are many times that I just tell myself, thank God there's beer at the end of the day. The issue is that you really don't know when the end of the day may happen sometimes. It could be 2 a.m. and back at 4. But this is a lot of fun, and I've never seen for quite a while such a fine group of deviants. And in fact, there are three things that I'm going to talk about today. Deviance is one of them. Enthusiasm is another. Advocacy is the third. So if you really pay close attention, and if I stay on track, I might cover all of those. Now, when people ask me how I ended up getting into the brewing industry, it conjures up a lot of ways to answer that question. I was a home brewer. I was 10 years past Charlie, where I started home brewing in 1980. Typically, I would be into stouts, imperial stouts, barley wines, something that I should have laid down longer than I really had. But certainly through that hobby of mine, I really started reading about and meeting other pioneers in this industry. Now, the other aspect of my background, maybe I should just try this thing here, I don't know. Are we okay? All right. Because I was going to dance later on, and I just wanted to have the freedom. I mean, I'm wearing one of my best shirts and everything. What the hell? Fellow, I was at a board meeting for the Minnesota Music Coalition this morning, and Chris Osgood said, "Are you going to a funeral?" Because I wasn't in blue jeans. I said, "No." But some of you know me. Huh? Just a little sobriety check there. Quite a few of you know me, and you know that I have a different kind of past. Because a lot of times when somebody asks me, "Mark, how did you end up in the beer business?" And I say, "With a degree in social work. I was trained in family therapy. And before I released myself into that first professional world, I specialized in chemical dependency, substance abuse, and addiction for adolescents and young adults. Now, the other issue for me was the fact that I grew up in North Dakota, south of Fargo, in barley country. Went to the University of North Dakota, where I was a fighting Sioux. I don't know if we can say that anymore, but we'll find out. The NCAA has an issue with this, I guess. But I moved to the Twin Cities in 1980, where I accepted a position to supervise this evaluation unit for adolescents in a major hospital in Minneapolis. Same year I started homebrewing. So by 1982, I really started getting concerned what the hell I was going to do with myself, because I got stuck in this classic middle management of where I had a lot of responsibility but no authority. Now, I'm pretty deep with Scandinavian DNA, and I know I have control issues. So that's something that really started tearing at my soul. It wasn't working with kids or families or the challenge of therapy. It was simply that I wasn't really in control of what the hell I wanted to do. So back in the early 80s, I started thinking, well, what's the next step? Go back to graduate school, go into private practice, go to medical school. And I thought, how about a brewery? Thank God I had no idea what was going to happen. You know, when I talk to entrepreneurship classes and that sort of thing, I usually end up talking for a good half hour on two characteristics: stubbornness and naivety. Because I'll tell you today that stubbornness will get you through times of no cash than anything else. And secondly, it's important that we maintain a certain attitude of being naive, not so much in terms of interpersonal relationships or business relationships, but it's essential that we don't know what's around that corner. If we did, we probably wouldn't take the risk. And believe me, starting a brewery is entrepreneurship at the ground level. And I think you guys know that. Yeah. So it's really a technique of survival for me not to be preoccupied about what's going to happen next month or next year. We do have a plan, but I cannot be preoccupied about that. So here I am, starting to do research, starting to travel at the 13 breweries that were around at that time. Went to my first American Home Brewers Association conference that focused on small-scale brewing in 1983. Met some interesting characters like Charles McElvey, a sheer knucklehead and a good one. Jim Schluter from Riverside Brewing Company, and Bill Newman. And believe me, I was taken back a little bit. First of all, the audience at that time in 83 was about half the size of this aisle. It was pretty intimate, but this is. And Jim Schluter, who was pretty much in the bag by the time he started talking, gave a 45-minute dissertation about, don't do this. Don't do it. And I was naive enough to go up to Schluter afterwards and say, why are you here giving that kind of a message? And it was his girlfriend that intervened on the conversation and said, would you leave him alone? He's been standing on concrete for 10 hours. So it just takes a lot of energy, a lot of work to get into this. And then you can start looking at a brewery from the point of being a business. So here I am, some knucklehead from North Dakota, move to the Twin Cities to start a brewery in St. Paul. I had some money, I had some savings. My former wife and I put our savings into starting the company. But I knew that we would need at least $500,000 to get going. So when it was time to do the financing, after the market research, after the business planning, and just getting set up, I started meeting people in St. Paul to ask them for checks of $10,000 or maybe $15,000, which is something I've never done in my life. Both of my parents were teachers. They were educators. So if you can imagine an investment presentation where here's a guy from North Dakota, a fighting Sioux, not from the University of Minnesota. And by the way, when you meet people in St. Paul, they start a conversation by saying, "What high school did you go to?" So the fact that I didn't even go to St. Thomas or the University of Minnesota put me at a deficit. So then when I described my background and they said, "Well, what the heck are you doing with your hospital experience starting a brewery?" So there was a pretty big credibility gap, to put it mildly. And the financing took about 2.5 years. Now, all of my vacation time, I would spend time at breweries. My former boss, who was a recovering addict, you know, every time I put in a vacation request, he would kind of put a smile on his face. He'd say, "Where are you going this time?" He says, "You went to Red Hook last month." And I said, "Oh, I'm going to go to Albany, New York, and spend some time with Bill Newman." Now, I don't know how many of you know Bill, have read about him, have tasted the beer that he used to make, but when you think about an act of deviance, Bill exemplifies that. Here's a fellow in 1979 started a brewery that did entirely cask-conditioned ales. And he was so religious that he didn't want any of the retail customers to sell or pour the beer colder than 45 degrees. So he was also making boxes by hand to put the casks in. I was there in 1983. And it was marvelous working with him. But unfortunately, and even today, something like cask ales is really in its infancy. But this man had a lot of guts. He went to contract brewing after that, and then eventually he faded away. Unfortunately, I've lost touch with him. So I had some really strong experiences before we even hit the street. When we opened our doors in September of 1986, it wasn't until 1992 that I found out that every business on University Avenue within a 10-block area had a pool going of how long we would last. Funny how things work that way. Well, maybe we did, but I haven't seen any money. Something else about 1986, 1987, the beer landscape, to put it mildly, was uniform and sterile. A couple of days ago, just to put some of my thoughts together, because believe me, there are a lot of things I could talk about with all of you guys, I was looking back at the market research that I was doing back in 85. Back then, Moosehead was the largest selling import beer in this area. The average number of draft lines at a tavern in a bar were 3. And if a tavern owner had 3 draft lines, it sure as hell would have been Schmidt, Special Export, and Grain Belt. And those were old school, because that was before the distributors got to those guys, and it was full of light beers. So when we came out with Summit Extra Pale Ale in the fall of 1986 with 45 bittering units, quite a few people thought that they should see a chiropractor. Because, you know, their neck had realized just a little bit of a snap and some after tension. But it's always been a philosophy of ours that what we're up to is we expect, not that we're trying to do this, but we expect to offend as many people as we attract. We also realize that when it comes to beer style, even today, after 24 years, we're still in our infancy in a true beer culture and beer education. When you walk into an area in the U.S., and when 80% of the beer that's sold is light beer, there is still a lot of potential. And that's why I consider you guys to be deviants. You guys are ahead of the curve, but you also have a hell of a lot of responsibility to lead others. It's very important. I've talked to home brewers that they've been doing it for maybe 2 or 3 years, and they really enjoy letting me know what things I should change about our beer. And what I've learned, first of all, is not to take this personally. Because the fact that somebody's even willing to talk about what they think about what we do for a living is significant. 24 years ago, there probably wasn't a conversation. So I think that's cool. Anytime someone talks about beer, it's a good thing. But for some of these individuals that are pretty new to, I guess, what I would consider beer culture, I think it's important that they develop this technique to listen and to explore styles. Let me give you an example. A few months ago, I wrote in our newsletter on our website an experience that I had with a 4 a.m. email. Showed up to work sometime after 7. I'm looking at this email that says, "Hey Mark, when the hell are you going to put some effing hops in your beer?" "I really wish you would dial your hops up. Why don't you get it up to 100 IBUs? And do it like so-and-so. Because I think your IPA, to be really honest, at 4 a.m., your IPA is bullshit." Well, thank God this happened a few months ago, because I can be composed when I talk about it now. But you know what my first thought was? Not to tell this SOB, what a pain in the ass he is, my first thought was, how am I going to share this with my brewing staff? Because I have 6 great brewers. They're well-trained. They're accomplished. They know what they're doing. So I took the high road, politely gave a response by saying very carefully, yes, I'm sorry that you're disappointed that there isn't a boatload of Cascades in our IPA. It doesn't represent this West Coast style. We happen to be more English in our heritage. And please continue to drink the beer you want to. And, oh, by the way, I'll share with my brewers that you think what they do for a living is bullshit. But, you know, this is kind of an example of where, you know, the fact that we're even talking about IBUs is a good thing. But there's been a little bit of a hop obsession lately where, you know, someone might look down their nose at us and say, oh, you're kind of traditional, aren't you? We go, yeah. Yeah, because we still believe that there's still 80% of our population that wouldn't recognize a Pilsner if they bit him in the ass. And we're taking on this responsibility of helping them come over and discover beer. Not some fizzy beverage that's cold. You know, there's always lemonade and vodka. So one of the things we're really clear about at Summit is our growth is going to come from not you guys. You're already with us. Unless you decide to drink more. And, well, we can keep going to that. But the true issue is that we need to get some of these other beer drinkers converted. And sometimes that conversion can be near religious. Because one of the things we need to keep in mind is the fact that the other beer drinkers are fixated on brands, not style. They don't argue about IPAs. They don't argue about IBUs. They don't argue about Imperial Stouts. They argue about brands. But we have to remind ourselves that those brands are dear to their heart. We even see this a little bit amongst the craft brewers right now. I've been around 24 years to the point of where I see small brewers criticizing other small brewers. And they use words like crap. They use words like bullshit. Why would you drink that? And that's an argument about style. Excuse me, about brand, not style. It took me a while to kind of figure this out because I was too wrapped up taking all these criticisms personally. Because when I started up, I wasn't taking pot shots at Ken Grossman or Fritz Maytag for what they did for a living. I looked at ways to complement and to extend and to add to this whole legacy of what we're all about here. So there's a little bit of a caution here of where sometimes our passion or enthusiasm about what's happening in this country, which is very real. This will never go away. But we really have to be respectful because it's only from a point of respect that we can advocate in good faith what we believe in, which is good beer. I try to avoid describing Budweiser and Miller as Bunny Whiz and Yellow Swill. I truthfully do. I don't necessarily drink their beer very often, but I have a lot of colleagues that work for those breweries. And believe me, they work hard and they're damn good at what they do. And I think it's remarkable that Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, want to play in the sandbox that we created. I can't think of a clearer point of credibility. Because the first 10 years when you scan, you know, going back from the late 70s to the late 80s, what the large industry and even the media, the journals thought of this movement, they weren't giving it much of a chance. So that's a huge sign of credibility. But it's our responsibility to keep the big guys honest. And the way we keep them honest is to talk about attributes, not by criticizing them. As an example, we have a program at Summit where we offer sensory analysis training for the salespeople of our distributors. We do that for a couple of reasons. Again, to foster our beer culture in the U.S. Secondly, if I can get a beer salesman, and believe me, they get pretty loose, there may be a couple in here, but they get loose with their language. And if I have an opportunity to spend time training a beer salesman to use the same language, terminology of a brewer, and to think like a brewer, they become a more effective salesperson. So literally, when we move forward in Summit today, you know, out of the 88,500 barrels we did last year, it was 45% draft beer. 80% was sold in the metro area right here. Almost 89% in the state of Minnesota. We have 2% market share of the beer that's sold in this state. And you know, 1 or 2% doesn't sound like a lot unless you're counting glasses. It's amazing to me that a little over 2 glasses out of every 100 beers poured in the state of Minnesota is a Summit. That's amazing. I never would have imagined that back in 86 and 87. So when somebody says, well, Stutrud, where do you want to go with this thing? I say, I can't see any reason why we won't garner or earn 4 to 5% sales in this state. And believe me, I mean earn sales. And that's where that whole aspect of business comes in. And I'm terribly concerned about the degree of consolidation that's been happening on the distribution tier. We have to stay on top of this. Maybe it'll open up some avenues for other people to start small distributorships in the future. But the reality is we cannot effectively or economically get beer from the cities to Duluth without a distributor. If we did that ourselves, I wouldn't be able to spend money on tanks. Advocacy is essential moving forward. I was sharing with Charlie, and he has the same experience that, unfortunately, our realities have become more and more political. And moving forward, we have to keep track of just a simple thing like excise taxes. And it's amazing how much education legislators on a state level and members of Congress need. And they need it from us in a very straightforward manner. The past 4 years in Minnesota have been fighting bills that either will triple or quadruple the rate of excise taxes in Minnesota. And when I sit down with these folks and say, you know, last year we did about $17 million in sales, gross sales, but out of that, $1.4 million was in the form of excise taxes to federal and state treasuries. It's 7% of our cost. So although we're in a very defensive situation, we have to be proactive and very educative. So a call to action in the future, keep an eye on that issues and others. Maintain your deviancy. But every once in a while, do some reflection. Another characteristic that I've developed is what I call benevolent silence. And that's when someone's really hammering away on brands or styles. And I think, well, I'll just simply listen and then enjoy a beer. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
I'll take some questions, you know, for a few minutes here if you have any burning issues that you can't leave this room without asking. Otherwise, I'll just sit down and have a beer quietly.
Did the guy email you back?
No, he did not. Yes?
Are you planning a special celebration for your
25th? Uh-huh. We are, but we don't know what the heck it's going to be yet. We had a very nice celebration. We called it the Big Brew for our 20th on Harriet Island. It was a very nice music festival. And we're starting to think about what we're going to do and getting a few ideas. Yes?
What do we need to do to help
them
get more additional cash
in Target Field? Well, once our budget gets close to Budweiser, then we can kind of muscle them a little bit. But it's very interesting that Summit's is starting to become one of the leading brands in terms of sales, in spite of the fact that we only have about 15% of the sources. And those folks will certainly pay attention to that. But with public venues, we're at a disadvantage. Going back in the late 80s and early 90s, when the Metrodome, they would send this form letter out saying, "Dear sir or madam, please submit your bids to supply us with your beer for the coming season." And literally, they were asking us to sell our beer for less than cost of what Budweiser would ask for, and we just decided to stay away for several years. In order for us to grow a business, to be perfectly honest, almost every transaction needs to be profitable at a certain level. And the relationship we have today with the Twins is good, and the Target Field has been a marvelous place. And for those of you who want to come back in this area and see a game there, it's terrific. Yes. Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you're welcome about the music. I mean, music is, we've always preferred that over race cars. (Clears throat) going back to the 90 shilling, and, you know, here I am. I've got so many things I could talk about. I didn't even mention the Unchained series, which is a program that we started last year. We have a what we call an idea management team at the brewery, where we have equal representation of people on a committee. So, you know, there are about 8 administrative folks, so they get one seat. There are no executives on this committee. Packaging, there are 15 people, they get 2 seats. Sales have 15, there are 15 people, they get 2 seats. A representative from the brewing staff. And these guys get together and they meet about quarterly to talk about instituting additional green practices at the brewery, to eliminating waste, to controlling cost. We've had an open book management process at our brewery for the past 10 years. Everybody knows exactly where our financial status is. And so this group talks about anything from business issues to new beers. And it was last year about this time that they said, well, what do you think about just starting a program where individually one of the 6 brewers would choose a style, be totally responsible not only for procuring all of the raw ingredients, but the process, the formulation, and the brewers even had their hand in the packaging design. And what I've told these guys, I said, well, you know that if you do something wrong, I'm the one that's going to jail. So whatever you do, it's got to be legal. But beyond that, I have no veto power. The brewers can go down to the sales team and say, this is our next Unchained beer. And if they don't like it, there's that benevolent silence. And the boys are having a hell of a lot of fun and have been making some remarkable beer. But to answer your question, whether or not the 90 shilling or the Kolsch or the India Rye Ale will come back is totally up to them. In fact, the longevity of this program itself is up to them. And I can't think of any other brewer offhand at the moment that has such a hands-off practice. But again, I've got a very strong team, and I don't need to micromanage them. I'll take one more question, if there is one. All right, then I can dance. Thank you again.
Now, there's a guy with some passion. It's always fun to hear advice from someone who has been there and still enjoys following his bliss, so to speak. Fun stuff. Well, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And you can check out our homebrewing DVDs, Introduction to Extract Homebrewing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits on our website. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in our store as well on our shop at basicbrewingshop.com. And you can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com associate link. We appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Buster Keaton 2 DVD pack. Very cool. And Von Zipper Papa G Men's Polarized Racewear Sunglasses, color black gloss / gray, poly, size, one size fits all. Very nice. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. And don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association through the associate link on basicbrewing.com as well as subscribe to BYO Magazine, too. Well, that's all. Until next time, I promise All right. I hope not to be sounding like I'm speaking through a kazoo next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you have a happy July 4th and the rest of the month as well. Even if you don't live in the United States, I hope your 4th of July is wonderful. You may not decide to blow things up like we do, but I hope you have fun. Drink some good home brews, will ya? I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson, our man down in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.